So, hello and welcome again. I'm going to now talk about the Singer-Nicholson model. In the previous episode, I talked about the differences between the Dawson-Danieli model, the unit membrane model, and the Singer-Nicholson model. And one of the big differences is the position of the proteins. Basically, what we have now is the following. There are three evidences that the Singer-Nicholson model is correct. Three basic proofs. Okay, and the Singer-Nicholson model looks like this: that you have a bilayer of phospholipids, and between embedded in the phospholipid, between the phospholipids embedded in them, you have proteins. And the three types of evidence for this is the number one, electron microscopic observation, so that you can actually see the proteins, floating between the phospholipids. Okay, so that's number one, but this of course was only possible because after the invention of the electron microscopes. So Dawson-Danieli, the model, which was kind of wrong, so to say, they were a little bit too early. It was a good start, but you should give credit to them where credit is due. They did their best, but Singer and Nicholson a little bit later, they were pretty lucky because they already had electron microscopes. So number one, so that's number one, electron microscopes. Number two, Singer and Nicholson, they analyzed membrane proteins, and depending on the polarity of the amino acids that the proteins are made of, after all, proteins are long chains of amino acids, some parts of the protein were fat soluble and some parts of the protein were more water soluble. And this was a second evidence because it actually shows that the outside parts of the protein, those parts that are turned towards water, they were water soluble, and those parts that were located next to the phospholipids, the tails of the phospholipids, so to say, they were fat soluble. So this was actually also an additional evidence that they had here that concerning the solubility of the proteins. And then the third one is another interesting experiment is the following is that they took cell membranes and they fused them together a little bit like soap bubbles. You have to imagine that a membrane is a little bit similar to a soap bubble. And what they've done is they've now taken cells and they have labeled the membrane with a different marker, so that you can distinguish them. These were so-called fluorescent markers, and they start to glow in a color when you put ultraviolet light on them. That's just to make it invisible. Yeah? And when you fuse those membranes together, it started to mix. So I'll just give you an analogy that you can actually imagine better. Let's say that you have two soap bubbles, and one of them you color with, I don't know, some blue ink, and the other one is just clear. And you've got these two soap bubbles, and then you fuse them together, you bring them together, and they kind of join together and they make one larger bubble. What happens to the blue color of the one bubble? And you're going to say, well, of course, it kind of mixes. Yeah? So it's not like this, that the half of the soap bubble is blue and the other one is clear, but it mixes. Yeah? So you see actually that even soap bubbles, which by the way are chemically very similar to membranes, yeah, there is it's fluid. Yeah? So it floats around. And probably have also seen it already before that these rainbow colors that you sometimes see in a soap bubble, those rainbow colors, they also can flow inside the bubble. And this shows that actually soap bubbles are fluid and actually just like a membrane. So, yeah, so these are basically the three types of evidence: electron microscopic observation, number two, the polarity of the proteins parts, and the third thing that when you fuse membranes together, that they kind of mix, yeah, and that they're fluid. Yeah. So, and with this evidence, let's have now a closer look how the fluid mosaic membrane model actually looks like. And I think what is really important here again is to have some kind of a drawing in front of you that you're able to follow along. Otherwise, yeah. Or you have a very good imagination, and then you're able to also imagine it. In a membrane, in a biological membrane, it doesn't really matter which one. It can be the plasma membrane of the cell. It can be the membranes that make up the different cell organelles. Yeah? There are three things that you need to know. I mean, two of them you already know, right? Phospholipids, they're made of phospholipids. They're made of different types of proteins. We know about that. And the third thing that you should include here is cholesterol. Okay, all of these parts are arranged, but they are fluid. So this means it's possible to move the different parts along next to each other. You can imagine a little bit a membrane like the following. Imagine that you have a room which is packed full of people. Okay, maybe a party or maybe on a dance floor, yeah, packed full of people. And each person is, let's say, a phospholipid. And then occasionally you have some people in there that are proteins, let's say. Yeah. And what happens is those people are moving along the dance floor and they're sliding past each other. Yeah. So you see it's also fluid, but they're all staying on the dance floor. They're not floating up into space or into the air, right? So they are actually on one level, of course, on the dance floor. And it's a little bit the same with phospholipids. The individual phospholipids, they stay in place on one level, but they're able to slide next to each other because the whole membrane is fluid and flexible. So now let's look a little bit more at those phospholipids and how they are arranged in relation to the proteins and in relation to the cholesterol. In order to understand the structure of a fluid mosaic model of a membrane, we have to look at the structure of one individual phospholipid. And one individual phospholipid has a hydrophilic head and two hydrophobic tails. Now, hydrophilic means that this part is soluble in water and likes to be associated with water because it is polar. Polar means that it carries a charge. And the two tails of a phospholipid, they are hydrophobic because they do not carry a charge and they like to be dissolved in oil or in fat, or at least they don't like to be in contact with water. And if you now take a whole bunch of phospholipids and if you put them together and if you mix them with water and if you shake it up, okay, and you mix it, what's going to happen is that in a so-called process of self-assembly, automatically, the phospholipids are going to go into a bilayer. Because the phospholipid tails of the phospholipids, they do not want to be next to the water, so they will turn towards each other and they will form a bilayer with the phospholipid tails, the hydrophobic tails in the center where there is no water, and the heads of the phospholipids, which are water soluble, turn towards the outside. Again, I think it's really best if you are able to follow along using a drawing here. It's a bilayer. A bilayer, of course, means two layers, and a bilayer makes one membrane. It's really important not to confuse this, because in a previous episode I talked about, I said that some cell organelles have a double membrane, right? Like, for example, the nucleus has two membranes. So how many bilayers or how many layers of phospholipids is this? That's actually four layers, right? A bilayer and then another bilayer, which gives you four layers of phospholipids. So this is basically the one thing. And so the bilayer is stabilized because of the water. And in between you have now the proteins. And there are some proteins that are now embedded in between the phospholipids. And these are known as so-called integral proteins because they're floating between the phospholipids. And then there are also so-called peripheral proteins. And those peripheral proteins, they are located on the outside of the bilayer. And those peripheral proteins we can expect, of course, to be water soluble, because they're mostly surrounded by water and the phospholipid heads, which are hydrophilic. Yeah. And the integral proteins, they have a part, the central part, which is next to the phospholipids, which is hydrophobic. It's afraid of water. Yeah, it does not like water. And the outside parts next to the phospholipids and the water are hydrophilic. Yeah. And this is basically what I meant previously when I said that this is also one evidence. Simply by looking at the parts of the protein which are hydrophilic and which are hydrophobic, you can already estimate where it is located. Yeah. So now what about the cholesterol? We talked about the phospholipids, which form a bilayer, the proteins that float between. Now what about the cholesterol? The cholesterol is highly hydrophobic. And therefore, it must be located between the tails of the phospholipids. Why is the cholesterol important? Because it adjusts the fluidity of the membrane. Yeah? And because it's very hydrophobic, hydrophilic particles, like for example salts and so on, they do not want to move through the hydrophobic central part of the phospholipid. Okay. They don't want to do that because hydrophilic and hydrophobic, they don't like each other. And cholesterol makes it more hydrophobic in the center. So salts, for example, they do not want to move directly through the phospholipid bilayer. That's basically one of the reasons why when we say a biological membrane is semi-permeable or selectively permeable, we mean that it only allows some substances to go through. And this is actually what we see here, that the phospholipid bilayer does not allow very hydrophilic substances to go through. By the way, side information, this is the reason why we have membranes. I mean, if a membrane were to allow everything to go through, then why have a membrane in the first place, right? Then you just might as well say we don't need one if everything is allowed to go through anyway. Huh? So the membrane kind of controls what is allowed to pass. Okay, so this is again a very short overview of how a membrane looks like. Again, you should be able to draw this, okay, and you should be able to explain what the phospholipid bilayer is, where the proteins are, the differences between integral and peripheral proteins, and also where you can find the cholesterol and also the function of the cholesterol, that it reduces the fluidity of the membrane and that it also reduces the permeability of the membrane for hydrophilic particles, like, for example, salts. Okay, so this is, that's it. And in the next episode, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the membrane proteins. All the best.